to the second case of the day, the United States versus Freeman. Ms. Bonamici.
May it please the Court, Counsel. Your Honors, the District Court misapplied the law in granting a new trial on counts 1, 10, and 11 in this case based on a finding that the government's rebuttal argument violated Nepeu versus Illinois. The government corrected and never relied on the verifiably inaccurate portions of the witness, Seneca Williams. And given the exhaustive nature of the airing of the issue of these errors during the trial, and on the absolutely overwhelming evidence that was presented with respect to counts 1, 10, and 11, there was no likelihood that the jury's judgment was affected by the government's argument, much less any likelihood that the jury would have acquitted had the government not made the challenged argument. As we argued in our briefs, the evidence relied upon the court was relied upon by the court in reaching its ruling was not false or anything like the testimony that was found objectionable in Nepeu. As Your Honors are aware, the evidence in Nepeu related to the answer to a government prosecutor's question, did I give you any consideration, did I offer to make a recommendation for you for a reduced sentence, to which the witness answered no. The prosecutor in that case knew very well that the answer was false because the prosecutor was the person who had made that offer of consideration to the witness. This case is completely different. In this case, the court was required to engage in a lengthy review of the evidence, drawing inferences, weighing credibility, doing all the things that the jury is really entitled to do in order to reach its conclusion that the evidence was false.
Ms. Bonamici, is it your understanding that the district judge concluded that it was an impossibility for Williams to have witnessed the events at the penthouse?
That is my understanding, and she said it explicitly.
Yeah. And is it the government's position that while Williams may have been wrong on time, he was right on venue, and the facts contained in the record would support a possibility, at least, that he could have done that? I mean, I guess I'm not exactly clear on where the government's position is vis-a-vis what the district judge has concluded.
Right. Well, the district court did decide that it was impossible.
Right.
For Seneca Williams to observe what he said he observed, when he said he observed it, and where he said he observed it. And the district court based its conclusion on two facts. And the first fact, and both facts related to Seneca Williams' timing or description of the timing. The first set of facts were the jail records. And as I'm sure Your Honors are aware, having read the briefs, that was a long, drawn-out process of getting the records. And the records were ambiguous. They definitely were. And they came in dribs and drabs with respect to both Seneca Williams and with respect to Brian Wilburn. But ultimately, it was determined that Brian Wilburn's jail records indicated that he could not have been at the Granville apartment during the period April 23, 2002 through September 8, 2005. And that was a time period, that time period covered the bulk of the time that Seneca Williams indicated he remembered the events at the Granville apartment happening. The problem with Seneca Williams' testimony regarding timing, though, was that it was imprecise in the extreme. And as a matter of fact, it was the subject of numerous objections on the part of the defense, claiming a lack of foundation for the testimony because he was unable to place the events he testified about in time frames that were narrow. In virtually every case, he gave wide time frames for all of the prior events that he discussed. And he frequently expressed uncertainty with respect to the times over and over and over again, to the great consternation of the defense during the trial.
When was Williams in prison?
I'm sorry?
What were the dates that Williams was in prison?
Williams was in prison, and this was a little bit more complicated. Williams was in prison during a period of 2001 and 2002. However, he was released from prison to go on work release, we ultimately found out. And that was a subject, by the way, that was not determined until the proceedings on the motion for reconsideration. What happened there was that he was released in, if I have it right, July of 2001 and went back into prison in December of 2002 and then, no, I've got that wrong. He went back into prison in July of 2002 and stayed there until February of July of 2001, February of 2002. I'm having trouble with my years. It's like Seneca Williams. But the reality of the situation is Seneca Williams did have to make a mistake, unless these events actually occurred in the period February of 2002 through April 23rd of 2002.
That's when neither he nor Wilburn were in prison, I guess.
Yes, and it's within the time frame approximately that Williams said he recalled the events at the Granville apartment occurring. Now, there were a number of different ways that he said it. Sometimes he said early 2003. Sometimes he said 2002-2003. Various different machinations on that are listed out in the brief so that you can see where he went with that. But it was also possible, it was ultimately determined, that the events might have happened earlier in 2001. But even if that were the case, the fact is that Seneca Williams would have made a mistake then about the timing of the events at the Granville apartment.
Prior to trial, though, how much did the government know about these prison dates for each of them, their key witness and the defendants?
Well, the government had, at the time that the trial began and until, I believe, about 6 days before the conclusion of the government's case, the government had in its possession a certified statement of conviction, which said a little bit more than just the time of conviction. It included information about the various events that had occurred in the litigation. The statement of conviction, though, was very ambiguous. And this is laid out in the brief, too. It made comments like defendant not present, bond revoked, all different things that made it unclear when he was and wasn't in prison. And it also did not specify whether any of the period that he was, quote unquote, in custody might have been spent in a work release setting. So there was really no way to determine whether he was in custody at any particular time merely from that document.
Well, I guess I'm having trouble understanding why the government wouldn't know that information. It is very knowable from prison and jail records prior to putting that witness in front of a jury and vouching for that witness's credibility one of the very key witnesses in an important prosecution.
And it's true, Your Honor, that additional investigation would have helped a lot on that point. But the evidence that the government did have was inconclusive. And the defendant, or rather the witness, was constantly expressing uncertainty about dates. So it was not, although some of the testimony came out in a way that on a cold record reads as though, there's not, in other words, there's no fudge language in the answer and in the question. The reality is...
And especially when your assistant jumps up and says that's not true, as though she knows.
Well, Your Honor, as far as I know, she did not jump up, but in any event, you're
figuratively,
right.
Let's say.
That was, I mean, the government acknowledged below that that was an unfortunate mistake. Speaking objections are improper and shouldn't have been made. But
especially
it was,
speaking objection that asserts some knowledge about this, when by your own admission here, it's later dribs and drabs that gives you any information.
Well, that was based on a misreading or a misreading. We were calling a misreading once we see the other documents. You know, once we saw the additional documents, the Cook County jail records, it became clearer what the you could interpret better the certified statement of conviction. But at the time, having only that document, she misread the information on that document and did not believe that the statement that defense counsel was making was accurate. The record reflects, however, that defense counsel at that time acknowledged an understanding that she misunderstood and misread the document. The prosecution had already advised counsel of their interpretation of the record. So it's not it was an unfortunate speaking objection, but it's not as though it were an argument to the jury or anything of the kind. The objection was to the unfairness of the question. And the question realistically was also not proper impeachment of this witness, because this witness had no reason to know when Brian Wilburn was or was not in jail. And he argued, I mean, he based his testimony on his best recollection of the times. And the fact that Wilburn was in jail during a certain period proved that he was inaccurate, but it in no way proved that he was lying, although that was the impression the defense wanted to convey. The district court took this evidence and found that everyone agreed at a certain point that this portion, the timing portion of the testimony, was inaccurate. And the government corrected the inaccuracies of that testimony. The government entered into a stipulation that made clear to the jury that the timing portion of those events was inaccurate, and the government conceded as much during arguments. So there just was no question that Seneca Williams got his timing wrong one way or the other with respect to these events. The court found that the government, or in finding that the government had unfairly and improperly relied on false evidence, the court had to go further. The court had to find that the substance of Williams' testimony was itself false. And that was clearly an exercise in considering the evidence in a way, as I say, that the jury would have to find. The court itself characterized that finding as an inference. As part of the memorandum opinion, the court states that the government refused to agree with the only inference that the court felt was appropriate. But the reality of the situation is the inference the government asked the jury to draw was consistent with the evidence, both that the events occurred a long time ago, there were numerous expressions of uncertainty on the part of the witness with respect to time. It was also consistent with this court's many cases that have held that the fact that mistakes are made with respect to timing in no way leads to the absolute conclusion that the witness is lying or certainly that the events never took place.
Ms. Bonamici, in closing argument in rebuttal, the government stated, so Seneca Williams said things happened with Brian Wilburn around 2002 and 2003, and it was really 2001. Would we find anything in the record that would support in any fashion that events occurred in 01 at the penthouse?
Well, before we get to that, I do want to make clear that, as was argued below, that was a product of the prosecutor being cut off by an objection. The prosecutor informed the court that it was not its intention to end with 2001. Her intention was to include a series of years that just indicated, so we got it, that stood for it was a different time. So that's number one. But number two, even just taking the 2001 time frame, the evidence of Seneca Williams' testimony did, or Seneca Williams' testimony that he was on work release plus the records that were eventually obtained that showed that he was, demonstrated that had Seneca Williams been wrong about the timing of the Granville period, then the observations he made regarding Brian Wilborn may very well have happened in 2001. But that was not what was in the prosecutor's mind at the time that she made that statement.
Wasn't there something before trial, a notice from Wilborn's attorney about his being in prison?
Yes, and the attorney focused on the certified statement of conviction, which the government determined was inconclusive, and that was the nature of the proceedings. But it's important to recognize that Mr. Wilborn did not move for the court to. I see that my time is up.
Oh, you may conclude your comment.
Mr. Wilborn did not attempt to prevent the government from producing or eliciting testimony regarding the Granville events prior to trial. Instead, he strategically waited for that testimony to come in, which he expected based on the grand jury statement, and then attempted to cross-examine Mr. Williams for that testimony. So he made the decision in advance not to try and preclude the government from getting into that testimony.
I was mostly curious what the government knew or should have known, I guess.
Well, the government knew that there were records that were ambiguous. The government did not know what other records would show. The government did make an effort to get additional records, and with respect to the Williams records, the Seneca Williams records that were gotten way late, the government actually received records that it believed and was told were complete with respect to Mr. Williams, and only right before the reply brief was filed in the motion to reconsider did they receive from a different source additional records that they had no idea existed. So the reality is that the state records there's multiple kinds. They're written for different reasons, none of which are to be evidence as to when people are or are not in jail. And it seems like it should be easy, but it's not as easy as it seems, as this record clearly reflects. Based on the arguments that we made in the brief, we would ask that this court reverse the district court's order for new trial and remand for sentencing.
Thank you, Ms. Bonamici. Mr. Goodman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Brian Wilborn on this appeal. I also represented him at trial. Seneca Williams was the key witness for the government against Brian Wilborn on the three disputed counts. He testified for the government in exchange for a very generous plea bargain, which promised him a 15-year reduction in his sentence. During the trial, it was shown that a significant portion of his testimony, specifically relating to Brian Wilborn, was false. In short, he testified that after he began working for Rondell Freeman in the summer of 2002 and up until early 2003, he regularly saw Brian Wilborn packaging drugs, cooking drugs, and discussing drug business with Rondell Freeman. It was established that Brian Wilborn went to jail in April of 2002, before Seneca Williams even began working for Rondell Freeman. The record reflects what happened, and there's no dispute about this. The government misread Mr. Wilborn's criminal history. The government had, a year before trial, a certified statement of Mr. Wilborn's criminal history. And what it showed is that it showed that he was arrested on state charges in early 2002 and convicted on those charges in February of 2003. The government mistakenly believed that he was on bond during that entire year. In fact, he was in the county jail during that entire year. So what the government did is they permitted Seneca Williams to testify that he observed Brian Williams committing numerous crimes during this entire time period that the government believed Wilborn was on bond. When this false testimony was exposed at trial, the government did not make any attempt to correct the record to assure that the jury didn't rely on the false testimony, as they were required to do under NAPIU. Instead, it took the position, which it finally presented to the jury in final rebuttal argument, that all of the events that Mr. Seneca Williams testified about were true, but that they took that he mixed up the dates. And I just want to say one thing about this, what Ms. Bonamici said about this long, drawn-out process of getting the jail records. The government had Mr. Williams' certified statement of conviction at least a year before the case went to trial. It's very clear if you look at it, and this isn't really an issue here, but it's very clear if you look at it, it shows his bond was revoked April 23, 2002. A year later, April 2, 2003, he's sentenced, and he's given credit for 346 days time served in the county jail. There's nothing unclear about it. And we did notify the government in writing as part of plea negotiations 2 months before trial that Mr. Williams' testimony about Brian's activities during that time period was incorrect. The government
I recognize the stipulation was finally entered before closing argument in this case. Was such a stipulation ever discussed at the stage you're talking about now, Mr. Goodman, with the government?
Prior to trial,
where you say that you informed the government as to
No, Judge, and I certainly expected that when the case came to trial that Seneca Williams would correct the false testimony that he gave in front of the grand jury. In fact, he didn't. He embellished it. Judge Lefkoe did not abuse her discretion in granting new trials here. What the record shows is that she correctly cited and applied the law of this circuit. She made a painstaking review of the record and found that the government's argument that Seneca Williams merely mixed up the dates was not a reasonable inference from the evidence that the jury had seen or heard, which is the proper standard. She focused mainly on a couple things. First,
well, should that decision, which I assume she arrived at before closing argument, should action have been taken by a district judge then? Why did this go to the jury if the district judge had concluded what you've suggested?
No, she concluded many months after the jury came back. The judge's decision.
I understand that when the decision is, but I guess I'm trying to follow the timeline. We have a stipulation before closing argument, which I guess speaks in part to either the inaccuracy or falsehood of Mr. Williams' testimony. Is that correct?
We have the stipulation simply acknowledged. It was read to the jury 12 days after Mr. Williams left the stand.
No, I understand
and,
that.
And it simply acknowledged that Brian Wilborn was continually incarcerated from April of 2002 through September of 2005. That's all. And then the government.
Well, that seriously undermines Williams' testimony.
Well, it would, except the government stood up in rebuttal argument and told the jury that Williams told the truth. And everything he said about Brian Wilborn was truthful. He just mixed up the dates. It had to have happened at some other time. And
your position is the government had to know that's wrong.
Yes.
That's not negligence. You're charging a deliberate decision to mislead.
It was deliberately false. What they did is credited false testimony that they knew to be false.
That's the argument.
Was.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the government knew it was false when Seneca Williams was up there. As I already stated, they misread Mr. Wilborn's criminal history and allowed their witness to commit perjury. What
did you say they didn't know when he was on the stand? Or they did?
As I've already explained, Judge, they misread Mr. Wilborn's criminal history and believed he was out on bond. So they believed their witness was telling the truth. They had been warned 2 months before trial. They ignored those warnings and decided to push forward with Mr. Williams. What Judge Lefkoe focused on was Mr. Williams' chronology of events, and that is that he was released from prison in February 21st, 2002. And this is a fixed date, and the government wants to talk about, well, maybe he was on work release at some point. None of that has any materiality here, Judge, because He was released on February 21st. His testimony was very specific that he stayed away from Cabrini Green for about 4 months, returned that summer, and went to work for Rondell Freeman. Then he spent the first 3 or 4 months working for Rondell Freeman at an apartment on the south side of Chicago, two different apartments. And then in the winter, late 2002, early 2003, they moved to this Granville penthouse apartment. By that time, according to his chronology, Mr. Wilborn had been in jail for 8 months already. On appeal, the government argues, well, they identify a two-month period in early 2002 when both Brian Wilborn and Seneca Williams were out on bond, and they say, well, it's physically possible that the events could have happened there. But it's not consistent with the evidence in the record, because as Judge Lefkoe found, it completely contradicts the chronology. And what Ms. Bonamici just said is that these 2 months were within the time frame of when Seneca Williams said he saw this. That's just simply false. It's not true. It is not. He was very specific. In order for it to have occurred during those 2 months, almost everything else that Seneca Williams testified to would have to be false. The fact that he stayed away from Cabrini, the fact that they began on the south side for 4 months, all of that would have to be false in order for these events to have taken place in early 2002. The other thing that Judge Lefkoe noted is that there was no contrary evidence in the record. It's not like the government could point to some other evidence that they were at this penthouse apartment in early 2002. There was nothing other than Seneca Williams' chronology. The government, as Judge Lefkoe concluded, this was not a reasonable inference from the evidence that the jury heard, and therefore, by asking the jury to credit testimony that the prosecutor knew was false, that was misconduct. And Judge Lefkoe also found properly, and this was not an abuse of discretion, that Mr. Wilborn was prejudiced by this. First of all, on the conspiracy charge, Seneca Williams' testimony was the most damning testimony linking Mr. Wilborn to the conspiracy. Mr. Wilborn, the other evidence that the government presented was consistent with Mr. Wilborn's theory that he was an independent operator drug dealer who was allowed to sell at Cabrini because of his close relationship and friendship with Rondell Freeman. In fact, the other cooperating witness said as much on cross-examination, and it's cited in our brief extensively, where he admitted, no, Brian Wilborn did not work for Rondell Freeman. He didn't control the drug dealing at Cabrini Green. Also on counts 10 and 11, Seneca Williams was the key witness. He is the one that interpreted the tapes for the jury, identified the speakers, talked about what all these things meant on the tapes. And this is very similar to the Boyd case, where the government improperly bolstered the testimony of one of the cooperating witnesses who was the key interpreter of tapes. And this court found that it was proper.
Why was the closing argument pointing out, as you describe it, the falsehoods of the test relating to the testimony of Williams, was that in any way limited? Were you limited in any way in pointing out what you pointed out to us today?
Well, as you know, one of the things that Judge Lefkoe focused on is the fact that this was presented not in their opening argument,
but in rebuttal,
where all we could do is issue objections. But certainly, if they had done, as they did in one of the cases the government relies on, Sade, where the witness, when it's exposed that the witness is wrong, the government gets up on redirect and has the witness clarify. They didn't do that here. If they had pinpointed a certain date, we could have challenged it during the course of trial. We certainly could have cross-examined Seneca Williams if they had put him up to make this explanation, but they didn't do that. They waited till rebuttal argument and then just told the jury, he told the truth, everything is truthful, you can count on that. Maybe he mixed up the dates. It must have happened at another time. So, thank you.
Ms. Ander?
May it please the court, counsels. The decision whether to grant a new trial is committed to the district court's discretion, and a review of that decision is differential. According to the law of this circuit, when a district court grants a motion for new trial, unless this court is convinced that the district court was mistaken, there is no warrant to reverse. And here, the district court found there was likelihood that the false testimony of government witness Seneca Williams affected the jury's judgment. Williams was the government's key witness in this case. He provided an overview of the conspiracy, and then he provided details to each charged defendant. I represent defendant appellee Adam Sanders. Williams expressly placed Adams in the charged conspiracy. He testified to seeing Adams sell drugs at particular locations. He testified to seeing Adams receive drugs. He testified that Freeman had taken Sanders on trips to Florida and would post bond for him. And he testified to specific incriminating conversations that occurred in the penthouse apartment. Williams and the district court, in her opinion, specifically stated that Williams' testimony about the conversation between Wilborn and Freeman in the penthouse apartment regarding a debt that Adam Sanders supposedly owed Freeman was some of the most direct evidence that the government offered to prove Sanders' involvement in the conspiracy. Specifically, Williams testified that Freeman complained that Sanders owed Freeman money. Wilborn said he would give Sanders crack cocaine to go out and sell so that Sanders could make money to pay Freeman. And then he testified that after hearing this conversation, he saw Sanders selling orange stripe bags, which were the same types of bags he said he saw Wilborn packaging at that time in the penthouse apartment. I wish to point out to this court that there was only one other cooperating witness who testified against Sanders. That particular individual had multiple convictions. His sentence was reduced from 20 to 40 years. And very importantly, he testified that Rondell Freeman considered Adam Sanders, in his words, a nephew, that Freeman didn't trust Sanders, and that he had no relationship of trust, which I submit to this court in some ways cut against the government's theory that Sanders worked with Freeman in the Freeman organization. There was no evidence that Sanders ever visited Freeman's Sheridan Shores apartment, where the ATF had set up surveillance films and where they videotaped conversations. These all occurred in 2006 to 2007. There was no evidence that Sanders was ever in any of these supposed apartments where Freeman was packaging drugs. And there was no evidence that Sanders ever packaged any drugs, transported drugs, or that his name was ever appearing on any of the ledgers which Freeman generated. There was no evidence that he was ever a member of the GD gang. So I submit to this court that the jury made a finding that the jury made no find, oh, excuse me, that in this particular case, that any finding by the jury was reasonably affected by the testimony of Seneca Williams. And I also wish to clarify for the record that Williams was in prison from August 2000 and then he to the date of December the 28th of 2000. He was then released on work release in December of 28th of the year 2000, and he remained on work release until July the 20th of 2001. He went back in custody in July 20th of 2001, and then he was released again February the 21st of 2002. And Williams, throughout his testimony, never testified that when he was on work release, he was even involved with the Freeman organization. I mean, not only did he never offer anything to say he was in an apartment doing something for Freeman, but he claimed to not even be involved in the organization, which is the same for his early release date of February 2002 until April of 2002. The government, when it talks about it had another reasonable inference, any reasonable inference has to be based on some evidence in the record. And Seneca Williams never claimed to have involvement in the organization at that time. In fact, he specifically testified that he first asked Rondell Freeman if he could return to packaging drugs in the summer of 2002. And not only did he pinpoint it as the summer of 2002, but he explained how many people were outside of the projects at that time and that he had to take Rondell Freeman aside and that he had to then talk to him apart from all of the people that were outside in the summertime. So I submit to this court that the judge's finding, the district court judge's finding, that Seneca Williams had provided testimony that was not truthful, that it was false, that it was impossible, is absolutely correct. And I submit to this court that based on the record in this case, there is no way the court could be convinced that the district court was mistaken.
Senator, having heard Mr. Goodman's argument, that is, you having heard it as well as I having heard it and my colleagues, is it your position that the judge was in error not to grant a motion for judgment of acquittal? I mean, as I understand the centrality and the critical nature of Williams' testimony, I guess, and the suggestion that NAPIEW has been violated, is the remedy here one because the government was negligent or because of misconduct? And additionally, I guess my inquiry to you is, obviously you filed a motion for judgment of acquittal, as I believe Mr. Goodman did, and I think maybe all defense counsel. Is it your position that that was the appropriate remedy and not this motion for a new trial? I mean, I'm not suggesting you don't want the new trial, but I guess I'm a little perplexed at, the charge of there being nothing more to go forward on and a district judge granting a new trial. So do you read the order of the judge that the government was involved in negligence and they have other evidence to come forward with? What is your read of her order?
Well, I believe that initially we were talking about an issue of negligence. When the witness is on the stand, he's testifying, and apparently the government believes at that time, or they've misread the record, so to speak. So they simply have a misunderstanding. But then there comes the point in time when they know that what Seneca Williams has testified to has to be inaccurate. They know
that results in a stipulation, right?
Right. And they set forth a stipulation. Okay, all well and good. But then they come back in rebuttal argument, and at that point in time, they say, well, he was only mixed up as to dates, minor inconsistencies, but the substance of his testimony is truthful. And that's where we see the government misconduct.
Yeah, but my question to you is, do you believe there should have been a judgment of acquittal in this case?
I believe there should, based on what we've said, but I believe also there should have been a new trial granted at that time. We filed motions for new trial. We adopted Mr. Goodman's motions to dismiss because this went to his client's presence in the penthouse apartment, and I believe there should have been at least a motion for new trial granted at that time.
Thank you, Sandra. Ms. Bonamici, we've asked everybody a lot of questions and gone over time. You may have an additional 2 minutes. I believe your time had expired, but you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Your Honor, with respect to timing, it is accurate. The stipulation was presented 12 days after Seneca Williams left the stand. It was presented 4 days, including a weekend, after additional records became available that clarified the certified statement of conviction with respect to the time that he was in jail.
It was after you had rested your case, wasn't it?
No, it was during
Still
our case, but it was at the very end. With respect to the time that Seneca Williams was in jail, Ms. Amdur has accurately listed the dates, but I would note that he was on bond, according to the records, during the summer of 2001. So if Mr. Williams simply got his chronology wrong by a year and everything was shoved over, that might be one explanation. The government does not, you know, has not tried to figure out where the errors were with respect to the timing.
So are you suggesting that the district judge, Ms. Bonamici, has a misreading of the record, too?
The district court judge expressly stated that it did not need to consider the additional records that supported Seneca Williams' trial testimony that he was on work release. The government would say that under these circumstances, given what's at stake here, that would be a very inappropriate thing to do, even if technically the court would have the right to do that. With respect to the...
She based her decision then on credibility of the witness.
Absolutely, and it was a decision that, as counsel acknowledged, was made long after the trial had been completed. The simple fact is neither the defendant did not ask and the court did not on its own strike any of the substantive testimony that's at issue here today, nor did the court prohibit or restrict the government's argument, even though it had advance notice of the government's intention to argue, to make the precise argument that it made during the trial. The court, with respect to Seneca Williams, you know, we reject the notion that he was a critical witness, so much so that Rule 29 might have been available. There was an overwhelming amount of evidence, including audio and videotapes, drug or trash pulls, seizures, over and over. And this is a case that needs to be reviewed on a de novo standard, because what's at issue here is an issue of law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the...